technology pause here. I apologize. So thanks, Josh. Hi, everybody. I'm Dustin. And my before I really get into the conversation today, I wanted to give you guys just a little bit of background on why this topic is so important to me and why I'm sharing it with you today. So I started my career as an advertising creative, so coming up with ideas for ad campaigns, and then moved into business management consulting and helped large companies, help their leadership improve the performance of their organizations. And then more recently, I've been working in commercial interiors. I've helped share research and insights on how our physical workspace impacts our ability to be productive, innovative, and creative. So this experience that I've had, it's kind of lumps up into three topics. That's creativity, leadership, and the workplace. And so these are things that I've been talking about and things that I write about on my blog, which is at thepeoplebrand.com. So that gives you a little bit of background on why I'm talking about this today. But I wanted to start with a question. So when you walk into a cathedral, what happens? Usually your eyes naturally go up. The architecture draws your attention toward the sky and prepares you for worship. So that means that like parents might be fighting with their kids and arguing in the parking lot, but as soon as they walk in the front doors of the church, they magically transform into this Norman Rockwell portrait, right? Their eyes are following the soaring arches up to the ceiling. You know, they're taking in the statues and the stained glass windows. And you can practically hear the Hallelujah chorus being sung with a pipe organ playing in the background. And maybe if you listen really closely, you can hear the sound of angels' wings, right? So the church building is doing exactly what it was designed to do, which is inspire you to worship. But a grocery store is a very different kind of building, right? They don't want you looking at the ceiling because, you know, if you look up there, you're just going to see rafters and fluorescent lighting, right? So what they do is the building is designed so that when you walk in, typically it guides you to the right, and then it leads you in a counterclockwise motion around, like making an entire counterclockwise circle around the store so that you see as many products as possible, and you buy as many products as possible. And so this is a reason why there's no such thing as a quick 5-minute trip to the grocery store to get a gallon of milk, right? You guys know this. If you've noticed, they never have the dairy section at the front of the store by the doors. You always have to walk to the very far back corner of the store. And a lot of times it's in the back, like it's, if you're facing the back of the store, it's like the back left of the store. So that counterclockwise motion moves you from to the right all the way back to the dairy, then make a full circle all the way back to the cash register. And so an hour later, you roll your cart full of items you never intended to buy into the checkout line. And you check out, you go home, and that's when you realize you forgot something, right? The gallon of milk that you intended to buy at the beginning. But otherwise, the store is doing exactly what it was designed to do, to persuade you to spend money. So I think Winston Churchill said this best when he said, "We shape our buildings, and afterwards our buildings shape us." So if you consider that and you think about your workspace, your desk, your cubicle, your open work environment, what is it shaping you to do? Does it encourage you to focus? Does it help you collaborate? Does it allow you to daydream? And yes, daydreaming can be a good thing. We'll get to that in just a little bit. So what if we paid as much attention to the design of our personal workspace as architects and designers pay to the design of cathedrals and retail stores? What would we design our spaces to do? So my assertion is that we can design our spaces so that they shape us into more creative workers. Now, you might be thinking, well, Why is creativity important in my work? If you're not a visual designer or something else that people tend to label as creative, you may not think that creativity is that important to your work. Well, Tim Brown is the CEO of IDEO, and he put it this way. In order to survive in today's complex world, organizations need to generate, embrace, and execute on new ideas that take creativity, and that takes creativity and a creatively capable workforce. So it's not just Tim Brown that believes this. There are multiple studies that have shown that people feel that creativity is a critical job skill. In fact, one study showed that 77% of workers believe creativity is a critical job skill. And at the same time, 2/3 of workers believe that their workplace actually inhibits their creativity. It stifles their creativity and their innovation. So most people think it's important. And at the same time, most people don't think their workplaces support that important creativity. And these are all kinds of workers, not just visual artists, not just advertising creatives. And the research also shows that that creativity impacts real business needs. Creativity allows companies to increase revenues, to increase market share, and to be more competitive. So, if creativity is this important, how do our work environments affect our creativity? Are they supporting our creativity or are they not? So, traditional work environments, traditional offices, their designs are usually with private offices where individuals have their own space, their own four walls. But the downside of that is it makes interaction with coworkers difficult and it restricts our collaboration. Well, more modern office trends are toward open space environments. So that helps create more collaboration, it encourages collaboration, but at the same time that it's increasing collaboration, it's also been shown to increase distractions and interruptions, and those hinder our ability to focus, which is another important aspect of the work that we do. And research shows that the lack of visual and acoustic privacy that these office spaces create actually reduces our ability to be creative. So it's a little counterintuitive. So honestly, our office space doesn't do a great job typically of supporting creativity at work. So if private offices inhibit collaboration, and if open offices create all these distractions and interruptions, then what can you do to enhance creativity where you work? Well, I'm going to give you a few ideas today that you can use no matter what kind of office you work in, even a home office. So these ideas, they won't require you to spend a whole lot of money. They're not going to, you know, require you to buy some crazy furniture or ping pong tables or give everybody in the office Nerf guns that they can shoot at each other. And if that's your idea of what a creative office space looks like, you might have the wrong perception of creativity. So that might be a good thing for us to cover now, which is, how does creativity actually work? So creativity is not a fixed attribute. You aren't born with a limited amount of creativity, just like you aren't born with a limited amount of air. Creativity is like breathing. You are made to generate your own creative oxygen. It just depends on how well you use the lungs that you have. And so I'm going to share with you 4 work activities that impact your creative breathing capacity. So first of all, we have to be able to work in individual and group settings alike. And creativity is going to look different in individual settings than it looks in a group work setting. Right? So if you have to work with other people, there's going to be times where you need to share information or work as a team. And there's also going to be times where you need to perform some heads down work and some individual work that requires focus and requires you to get into some sort of, you know, flow of productivity. The second work activity that affects our creative capacity is 2 modes of thinking. focused and diffuse thinking. So early in the creative process, it's helpful to be focused on whatever issue it is that you're trying to solve and potential, and kind of be clearly thinking about potential solutions. But after a while, that can actually be a detriment to your creativity. So it's helpful after a while of focused thinking to change it up and to actually switch to diffuse thinking. Now, that could be something like going for a walk or just allowing yourself to daydream, right? So we talked earlier about this is when daydreaming is actually helpful, is when you need diffuse thinking, you know, less focused thinking, broader thinking. And so actually whenever you're allowing yourself to daydream or you take a walk or do something else like that, it actually allows your brain to continue to process the issue that you're trying to work out before that you're so focused on. But I was actually talking to Josh about this, and he brought up something that I had seen before, which is a Barbara Oakley presentation on this, that she has a Coursera presentation, and a subset of it, one of the modules, is on focus and diffuse thinking. And so she illustrated it as, if you think of your brain like a pinball machine, then during focus thinking, all of the bumpers in the pinball machine, there's a whole bunch of them, and they're really tight and close together. So as your thought processes enter the pinball machine of your brain, those thought processes bump around in real tight corridors and follow real tight pathways. And what happens is typically that forces your thought processes to stay in one area of your brain. But during diffuse thinking, there's fewer of these bumpers in the pinball machine of your brain, and they're more spread out. So as a thought process enters that, it's able to take, you know, it's able to wander around and explore other areas of your brain and other pathways. And because of that, you're able to make connections you otherwise wouldn't have made if you're focusing in on the specifics. So we need both focused thinking and diffuse thinking to be effective in our creativity. A third activity that affects our creative capacity is collaboration. Now, this is especially important in group settings. And when you think of collaboration, you probably think of it in one big broad topic, but it actually, there are three different kinds of collaboration. There is informative collaboration, and this is when you've got information that has to be shared with multiple people so that no one in the group is left in the dark. And I knew an organization that actually called this NetMap. And NetMap stood for Nobody Ever Tells Me Anything Prevention, right? And I love that. And it's a great example of informative collaboration. Then there's generative collaboration. So this is when you're not just trying to inform everybody, you're actually trying to create something through your collaboration. You're trying to come up with multiple ideas, you're trying to work together on a work product, but you're creating something during generative collaboration. And then thirdly, the third kind of collaboration is evaluative collaboration. And this is when you're reviewing ideas or suggestions and you're judging the quality of those ideas. So you're performing some sort of judgment during evaluative collaboration as a group. So these forms of collaboration, they all have different requirements in order for them to be effective. So finally, the fourth activity that affects our creative capacity is divergent and convergent thinking, okay? So divergent thinking is opening yourself up to a variety of ideas so that you see potential solutions. There are multiple solutions to this issue, and we're going to explore many of them. And so the main focus of divergent thinking is a quantity of ideas. You're trying to maximize quantity. Convergent thinking narrows your options. You're trying to narrow down to the not multiple solutions, but you're trying to narrow down to the best solution. And so you're not maximizing quality, or you're not maximizing quantity, you're actually maximizing the quality of the ideas. And convergent thinking also helps us break down solutions into multiple steps into practical tasks because we're focusing in on the specific details. So it's a little bit similar, but a little bit different than diffuse and focused thinking as far as what you're keying in on. So your work environment has to support each one of these creative activities. We talked about individual and group work. We talked about focused and diffuse thinking. We talked about three different kinds of collaboration. And then finally, we talked about divergent and convergent thinking. So we know these creative activities. If these are important to our creativity, how does our physical work environment impact these activities? So there are actually four spatial attributes that affect our creative environments. And those four attributes are privacy, posture, presence, and proximity. Okay, so how's that for alliteration? So clearly, privacy affects our ability to work as individuals or to work in groups, right? Open office plans, they're really cool. They're great for increasing collaboration, but as we said, it's not so great for focus work. You know, there's a lot of distractions, there's interruptions that occur, and so it really makes it hard for us to do the important focus work that can impact our creativity. You're lacking visual and acoustic privacy in these settings. Now, the other benefit of privacy is it has a psychological benefit. That psychological benefit is safety. So when you are in a private space, it frees you up. It gives you a sense of safety so that you're freed up to take bigger risks, try new ideas, to present new ideas. And that's going to be helpful with divergent thinking because you're trying to come up with multiple ideas. You're trying to kind of break outside of the box. You're trying to do something that maybe you've never done before or never heard of somebody doing it before. And if you have that psychological safety of a private space, it helps you to kind of go out on a branch, to try, you know, go out on a limb and try a new idea. And open office settings can benefit from having these smaller enclosed areas for individuals to go into so that you can also do focus work, right? So you talk about the distractions of an open environment. If you can create some smaller private spaces, that gives people an option that they can use when they need that privacy. Now, if you're working from home, you still want to consider privacy. You think, well, this is my house. You know, it's how private can it get? But you may need at certain times to avoid, you know, barking dogs or children that are playing, and you avoid that those acoustic distractions that they create. So how can you avoid that? And then be thinking about also, what can you do to avoid visual distractions? How do you get visual privacy? Can you shut a door? Can you close your window blinds? You know, if you're sitting, like my computer right now is sitting, there's a window right behind my monitor. And if I need visual privacy, sometimes, you know, I'll be working and I don't shut the blinds and somebody's walking their dog right in front of my house and boom, oh, I start looking off and it disrupts my focus work. So it's important in a home office as well. Posture is an attribute that is often overlooked when people think about our creative capacity. Standing or perching on a tall stool actually can increase your collaborative work because it encourages active participation. So it allows you to jump up real quick and, you know, draw something on the whiteboard or to interact with a flip chart or to engage in the conversation that somebody's having. So standing and perching can increase collaboration. While lounging positions are actually very good for stimulating diffuse thinking that we talked about earlier. It rejuvenates your energy, and that position allows you to relax and allows your mind to wander and discover new ideas that it may not have thought of if you're in a more focused position. But for focus work, you actually want to think about having a good task chair that adjusts to support your specific height and your shape and will support different positions that you sit in. And one of the reasons why it's so important is that if you're uncomfortable, you tend to start shifting yourself and you start to fidget because of discomfort. And that can actually break up your focus as well and keep you from getting into a productive flow. So the other thing is alternating these different postures of sitting or lounging or perching or standing. That's not just helpful for your creativity. There's actually research that shows that it's very helpful. It has benefits for your health and wellness as well. Next, presence is critical to collaborative work. And this is one of the reasons why Steve Jobs was so adamant about the new headquarters for Pixar Animation having a large atrium in the center of their building that had all these amenities that people would want to go to and go get or use, and it would force them to interact with each other so that people would see somebody that doesn't sit next to them in a nearby office, but they interact and they're able to collaborate more. He knew that space would affect the animation studio's creative capacity. Presence also can impact group work. So if you're working remotely or if you're co-located in an office building, either way, it's important to consider how easy is it for you to communicate with the people that you need to collaborate with. That might be face-to-face or it could be through technology. And so it makes you think about having the right people present in order to share the necessary data. As we talked about, that's informative collaboration. The right people present to make proper decisions whenever you're doing evaluative collaboration, and the right people present to produce great ideas when you're actually performing generative collaboration. Now, last is proximity. And it's similar to presence, but proximity involves more than people. This factors in accessibility of tools, lighting, technology, and proper work surfaces. So during different kinds of focus or collaborative work, you might need a large work surface in order to spread out documents or to access the tools that you need. You might also at some point need outside lighting or a good view of nature outside that will help inspire you during diffuse thinking. Another thing that's valuable is proximity to certain tools like whiteboards or flip charts, which are really helpful for divergent thinking when you're doing an exercise like mind mapping or brainstorming. And group collaboration a lot of times can hinge on your ability to share your information, right? We talked about informative collaboration. Those are times where you might need to have in proximity, you'll want a large screen or a projector, or you might want to have screen sharing software like we're using right now in Zoom that allows you to share information with people that are accessing remotely. But technology is not just critical for group settings. It's also critical for individual settings, for individuals to be able to do their focus work. You don't want to make it hard for individuals to move with their technology. So when people are using a computer, or they have to have their phone with them, you know, make it easy for them to be mobile. Because otherwise, if they feel like you have to stay with a landline or they have to stay with a big desktop computer, they feel handcuffed to their desk. And then when their work activity changes and all of a sudden they need to do something collaborative, they don't feel like they can leave their desk, and they bring people in to work collaboratively in an environment that's not conducive for it. Or they need privacy and they can't leave. And so then they're trying to do focus work in an area that has all these distractions that they can't get away from, right? So proximity matters to our creative capacity. So I want to give you guys just a few bonus thoughts here. So if your home office or your work office is not an ideal, it doesn't have an ideal space for some sort of creative activity, you might want to consider like a nearby cafe or your local library as an option. So the cafes, they provide these inspirational spaces that are energetic and are good for diffuse and divergent thinking. Libraries, they offer private rooms that you can reserve a lot of times in order to go in and maybe do collaborative work with a group of people or to do individual focus work. And if those options don't work for you, maybe you don't have one nearby, maybe you don't have a cafe or a library nearby, or maybe you don't feel like you have the freedom or the time to leave your office, another quick option and possible solution is to use headphones. So that's a quick option for privacy. It gives you the acoustical privacy because it'll block out a lot of the noise, keep you from hearing a neighboring conversation. But also it works as a visual cue to your coworkers to let them know I'm focusing right now and I don't want to be interrupted. So it's less likely that you'll be interrupted if you're wearing headphones, even in an open office environment. So the other thing is furniture companies are starting to key in on this, and they're creating what some people are calling privacy pods. And these come in many different forms, but they add privacy to an open office environment. And some of them look like a, you know, first class amenities for airline passengers. And they'll have the footrest and the privacy screen that wraps around it. So you got visual privacy. And then others look like a phone booth and allow people, you know, small ones for individual work, larger ones for small groups to gather in and have some visual privacy, but definitely have acoustic privacy as they're somewhat soundproofed as well. And they'll put these right in the middle of an open office environment. So as you can see, as we've gone through all this information, I've shared with you different kinds of creative activities, different physical environmental attributes that affect those creative activities. Supporting your creativity, it's not a one shape fits all solution. The key is to have a variety of options and for you to be able to have the choice and control to choose the shape that supports your current creative activity. And as I mentioned earlier, Churchill said, we shape our buildings and afterwards our buildings shape us. So hopefully some of the tips that I've shared with you today, you can use them to shape your space. So afterwards it will shape you into someone that's more capable, more innovative, and ultimately more creative. So that's all I've got.